Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article by Federman et al. Survival with favorable neurologic outcome and quality of cardiopulmonary resuscitation following in-hospital cardiac arrest in children with cardiac disease compared with non-cardiac disease. Objectives: to assess associations between outcome and cardiopulmonary resuscitation or CPR quality for in-hospital cardiac arrest in children with medical cardiac, surgical cardiac, or non-cardiac disease. Design: secondary analysis of a multicenter cluster randomized trial, the ICU Resuscitation Project. Setting: 18 PICUs. Patients: children less than or equal to 18 years old and greater than or equal to 37 weeks post-conceptual age receiving chest compressions of any duration during the study. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 1,100 children with in-hospital cardiac arrest, there were 273 medical cardiac cases, or 25%, 383 surgical cardiac cases, or 35%, and 444 non-cardiac cases, or 40%. Favorable neurologic outcome was defined as no more than moderate disability or no worsening from baseline pediatric cerebral performance category at discharge. The medical cardiac group had lower odds of survival with favorable neurologic outcomes compared with the non-cardiac group, 48% versus 55%, with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.59, a 95% confidence interval of 0.39 to 0.87, and a p-value equal to 0.008. And the medical cardiac group also had lower odds of survival with favorable neurologic outcomes compared with the surgical cardiac group, 48% versus 58%, with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.64, a 95% confidence interval of 0.45 to 0.9, and a p-value equal to 0.01. We failed to identify a difference in favorable outcomes between surgical cardiac and non-cardiac groups. We also failed to identify differences in chest compression rate, chest compression fraction, ventilation rate, intra-arrest average target diastolic or systolic blood pressure between medical cardiac versus non-cardiac and surgical cardiac versus non-cardiac groups. The surgical cardiac group had lower odds of achieving target chest compression depth compared to the non-cardiac group, with an odds ratio of 0.15, a 95% confidence interval of 0.02 to 0.52, and a p-value equal to 0.001. We failed to identify a difference in the percentage of patients achieving cardiac chest compression depth when comparing medical cardiac versus non-cardiac groups. Conclusions: in pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest, medical cardiac patients had lower odds of survival with favorable neurologic outcomes compared with non-cardiac and surgical cardiac patients. We failed to find differences in CPR quality between medical cardiac and non-cardiac patients, but there were lower odds of achieving target chest compression depth in surgical cardiac compared to non-cardiac patients. Abstract 2 is a feature article by Deep et al. Epoprostenol, or prostacycline analog, as a sole anticoagulant in continuous renal replacement therapy for critically ill children with liver disease, a single-center retrospective study from 2010 to 2019. Objectives: despite deranged coagulation, children with liver disease undergoing continuous renal replacement therapy, or CRRT, are prone to circuit clotting. Commonly used anticoagulants like heparin and citrate can have side effects. The aim of this study was to describe our experience of using epoprostenol, a synthetic prostacycline analog, as a sole anticoagulant during CRRT in children with liver disease. Design: single-center retrospective study from 2010 to 2019. Setting: 16-bedded PICU within a United Kingdom super-regional center for pediatric hepatology. Patients: children with liver disease admitted to PICU who underwent CRRT anticoagulation with epoprostenol. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Regarding CRRT, we assessed filter life duration, effective 60-hour filter survival, and effective solute clearance. We also assessed the frequency of major or minor bleeding episodes per 1,000 hours of CRRT, the use of platelet and RBC transfusions, and the frequency of hypotensive episodes per 1,000 hours of CRRT. In the 10 years 2010 to 2019, we used epoprostenol anticoagulation during 353 filter episodes of CRRT lasting 18,508 hours in 96 patients over 108 admissions. Median filter life was 48 hours with an interquartile range of 32 to 72 hours and 22.9% of filters clotted. Effective 60-hour filter survival was 60.5%. We identified that 5.9% of filters were complicated by major bleeding or 1.13 episodes per 1,000 hours of CRRT, 5.1% by minor bleeding or 0.97 per 1,000 hours, and 11.6% by hypotension or 2.22 per 1,000 hours. There were no differences in filter life or clotting between patients with acute liver failure and other liver diseases. There were no differences in rates of bleeding, hypotension, or transfusion when comparing patients with initial platelets of less than or equal to 50 times 10 to the 9th per liter to those with a higher initial count. Conclusions. Epoprostenol, or prostacyclin, as the sole anticoagulant for children with liver disease receiving CRRT in PICU, results in a good circuit life, and complications such as bleeding and hypotension are similar to reports using other anticoagulants despite concerns about coagulopathy in this cohort. Abstract 3 is a feature review article by Walker et al. Performance of Tools and Measures to Predict Fluid Responsiveness in Pediatric Shock and Critical Illness, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. Objectives. In this systematic review and meta-analysis, we asked, do predictors of fluid responsiveness in children perform comparably? 1. In the PICU as in non-PICU settings. 2. In shock states compared with non-shock states. Additionally, 3. Is there an association between preload responsiveness and clinical response? Data sources. Ovid Medline, PubMed, and MBASE databases were searched from inception through May 2022. Study selection. Included studies reported physiological responses to IV fluid administration in humans less than 18 years. Only studies reporting an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve were included for descriptive analysis. Only studies for which a standard error could be estimated were included for meta-analysis. Data extraction, title, abstract, full-text screening, and extraction were completed by two authors. Variables extracted included predictors or tools and outcome measures or reference tests of fluid responsiveness, demographic, and clinical variables. Data synthesis. We identified 62 articles containing 204 area under the receiver operating characteristic curves for 55 tools, primarily describing mechanically ventilated children in an operating room or PICU. Meta-analysis across all tools showed poor predictive performance, with an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.66 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.63 to 0.69, although individual performance varied greatly, with a range of 0.49 to 0.87. After controlling for PICU setting and shock state, PICU setting was associated with decreased predictive performance, with a coefficient of negative 0.56 and a p-value equal to 0.0007, while shock state was associated with increased performance, with a coefficient of 0.54 and a p-value equal to 0.0006. Effect of PICU setting and shock state on each tool was not statistically significant, but analysis was limited by sample size. The association between preload responsiveness and clinical response was rarely studied, but results did not suggest an association. Ultrasound measurements were prone to inherent test review and incorporation biases. Conclusions. We suggest three opportunities for further research in fluid responsiveness in children. 1. Assessing predictive performance of tools during resuscitation in shock states. 2. Separating predictive tools from reference tests when using ultrasound techniques. And 3. Targeting decreasing time in a shock state rather than just increase in preload. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation by Rogerson et al. Wide institutional variability in the treatment of pediatric critical asthma, a multicenter retrospective study. Objectives. Children with status asthmaticus refractory to first-line therapies of systemic corticosteroids and inhaled beta agonists often receive additional treatments. Because there are no national guidelines on the use of asthma therapies in the PICU, we sought to evaluate institutional variability in the use of adjunctive asthma treatments and associations with length of stay and PICU use. Design: multicenter retrospective cohort study. Setting: administrative data from the Pediatric Health Information Systems, or PHIS, database. Patients: all inpatients 2 to 18 years old who were admitted to a PHIS hospital between 2013 and 2021 with a diagnostic code for asthma. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. This study included 213,506 inpatient encounters for asthma, of which 29,026 patient encounters included care in a PICU from 39 institutions. Among these PICU encounters, large variability was seen across institutions in both the number of adjunctive asthma therapies used per encounter and types of adjunctive asthma therapies used. The number of adjunctive asthma therapies used per encounter had a minimum of 0.6, a median of 1.7, a maximum of 2.5, and a p-value less than 0.01. The types of adjunctive asthma therapies used included aminophylline, ipratropium, magnesium, epinephrine, and terbutaline. The center-level median hospital length of stay ranged from 1 day with an interquartile range of 1 to 3 to 4 days with an interquartile range from 3 to 6. Among all the 213,506 inpatient encounters for asthma, the range of asthma admissions that resulted in PICU admission varied between centers from 5.2% to 47.3%. The average number of adjunctive therapies used per institution was not significantly associated with hospital length of stay, with a p-value equal to 0.81, nor the percentage of encounters with PICU admission, with a p-value equal to 0.47. Conclusions. Use of adjunctive therapies for status asthmaticus varies widely among large children's hospitals and was not associated with hospital length of stay or the percentage of encounters with PICU admission. Wide variance presents an opportunity for standardizing care with evidence-based guidelines to optimize outcomes and decrease adverse treatment effects and hospital costs. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation by Av et al. Perfusion Index Variations in Children with Septic Shock, a single-center observational cohort study in India. Objectives: to study the following in children with septic shock. 1. Variation in peripheral perfusion index, or PI, which is a derived variable from pulse oximetry. 2. Correlation between PI and lactate concentration. And 3. Exploratory diagnostic evaluation between mortality and PI. Design: prospective observational study from October 2018 to March 2020. Setting: pediatric emergency department and PICU of a tertiary hospital in India. Patients: children 1 month to 16 years old with septic shock. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Data collected included demographic, clinical, laboratory, and outcome-related variables. Hemodynamic variables like heart rate, mean arterial pressure, and PI, along with serum lactate, were recorded at specific intervals. A total of 112 patients with septic shock were recruited, with a median age of 50 months and an interquartile range of 12 to 118.5 months, and 65 of 112, or 58%, were male. Overall mortality was 25 of 112, or 22%. At admission, the median PI was 0.6, with an interquartile range of negative 0.3 to 0.93, and we used a PI less than or equal to 0.6 to define a critical PI. Of 61 children with critical PI at admission, 26 of 61 increased above this threshold by 6 hours. We observed a negative correlation between PI and lactate at admission and at 6 hours. At admission, the R was equal to negative 0.27 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.44 to negative 0.08, and a p-value equal to 0.006, and at 6 hours, the R was equal to negative 0.21 with a 95% confidence interval of negative 0.39 to negative 0.02, and a p-value equal to 0.03. In the exploratory analysis, a PI cutoff of less than or equal to 0.6 at 6 hours had an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.74 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.6 to 0.88. That is, with a 70% sensitivity and 81% specificity for mortality, the performance of such a test in our population, pre- to post-test probability for mortality would be 0.22 to 0.51. Conclusions: we have used pulse oximetry-derived peripheral perfusion index, or PI, in children presenting with septic shock and found that the value is negatively correlated with a rise in serum lactate concentration. However, the utility of using a critical threshold value in PI of less than or equal to 0.6 after 6 hours of treatment to be indicative of later mortality has considerable uncertainty. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation by Schlosser, Medetiri et al. Delay between actual occurrence of patient vital sign and the nominal appearance in the electronic health record, single-center retrospective study of PICU data, 2014 to 2018. Objectives: Patient vital sign data charted in the electronic health record, or EHR, are used for time-sensitive decisions, yet little is known about when these data become nominally available compared with when the vital sign was actually measured. The objective of this study was to determine the magnitude of any delay between when a vital sign was actually measured in a patient and when it nominally appears in the EHR. Design. We performed a single-center retrospective cohort study. Setting. Tertiary Academic Children's Hospital. Patients. A total of 5,458 patients were admitted to a PICU from January 2014 to December 2018. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We analyzed entry and display times of all vital signs entered in the EHR. The primary outcome measurement was time between vital sign occurrence and nominal timing of the vital sign in the EHR. A total of 9,818,901 vital sign recordings occurred during the study period. Across the entire cohort, the median difference between time of occurrence and nominal time in the EHR was 41 minutes, 58 seconds, with an interquartile range of 13 minutes, 42 seconds to 1 hour, 44 minutes, 10 seconds. Lag in the first 24 hours of PICU admission was 47 minutes, 34 seconds, with an interquartile range of 15 minutes, 23 seconds to 2 hours and 19 minutes, and lag in the second 24 hours was 38 minutes, 49 seconds, with an interquartile range of 13 minutes, 9 seconds to 1 hour, 29 minutes, 22 seconds, with a p-value less than 0.001. There were 1,892,143 occurrences of batch charting. Conclusions. This retrospective study shows a lag between vital sign occurrence and its appearance in the EHR, as well as a frequent practice of batch charting. The magnitude of the delay, a median of about 40 minutes, suggests that vital signs available in the EHR for clinical review and incorporation into clinical alerts may be outdated by the time they are available. Abstract 7 is a review article by Knapp et al. Dexmedetomidine Withdrawal Syndrome in Children in the PICU, Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. Objectives: to systematically review literature describing the clinical presentation, risk factors, and treatment for dexmedetomidine withdrawal in the PICU. Data sources: Medline, PubMed, Cochrane, Web of Science, and Scopus databases were searched. Study selection: eligible studies were published from January 2000 to January 2022 and reported clinical data for patients younger than 21 years old following discontinuation of dexmedetomidine after greater than or equal to 24 hours of infusion. Data extraction. Abstracts identified during an initial search were screened and data were manually abstracted after full text review of eligible articles. The Newcastle Ottawa scale was used to assess study quality. Summary statistics were provided and Spearman rank correlation coefficient was used to identify relationships between covariates and withdrawal signs. A weighted prevalence for each withdrawal sign was generated using a random effects model. Data synthesis. 23 studies, 22 of which were retrospective cohort studies, containing 28 distinct cohorts, were included. Median cumulative dexmedetomidine exposure by dose was 105.95 micrograms per kilogram with a range of 30 to 232.7 micrograms per kilogram, and median dexmedetomidine infusion duration was 131.75 hours with a range of 20.5 to 525.6 hours. Weighted estimates for proportion of subjects experiencing withdrawal signs across all cohorts were hypertension, 0.34, with a range of 0 to 0.92, tachycardia, 0.26, with a range of 0 to 0.87, and agitation, 0.26, with a range of 0.09 to 0.77. Meta-analysis revealed no correlation between dexmedetomidine exposure variables and withdrawal signs. A moderate negative monotonic relationship existed between the proportion of patients who had undergone cardiac surgery and the proportion experiencing hypertension and tachycardia, indicating that in cohorts with a higher proportion of patients who were post-cardiac surgery, there were fewer occurrences of hypertension and/or tachycardia. Correlation coefficient for hypertension was negative 0.47 with a p-value equal to 0.048, and correlation coefficient for tachycardia was negative 0.57 with a p-value equal to 0.008. Conclusions. On review of the 2000 to 2022 literature, dexmedetomidine withdrawal may be characterized by tachycardia, hypertension, or agitation, particularly with higher cumulative doses or prolonged durations. Since most studies included in the review were retrospective, prospective studies are needed to further clarify risk factors, establish diagnostic criteria, and identify optimal management strategies. Abstract 8 is an online clinical investigation by Osborne et al. Viral detection by reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction in upper respiratory tract and metagenomic RNA sequencing in lower respiratory tract in critically ill children with suspected lower respiratory tract infection. Objectives: viral lower respiratory tract contributes to substantial morbidity and mortality in children. Diagnosis is typically confirmed by reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reaction, or RT-PCR, of nasopharyngeal specimens in hospitalized patients. However, it is unknown whether nasopharyngeal detection accurately reflects presence of virus in the lower respiratory tract. This study evaluates agreement between viral detection from nasopharyngeal specimens by RT-PCR compared with metagenomic next-generation RNA sequencing from tracheal aspirates. Design: this is an analysis of a 7-center prospective cohort study. Setting: 7 PICUs within academic children's hospitals in the United States. Patients: critically ill children from 1 month to 18 years who required mechanical ventilation via endotracheal tube for greater than or equal to 72 hours. Interventions: we evaluated agreement in viral detection between paired upper and lower respiratory tract samples. Results of clinical nasopharyngeal RT-PCR were compared with tracheal aspirate RNA sequencing. Positive and negative predictive agreement and Cohen's kappa were used to assess agreement. Measurements and main results: of 295 subjects with paired testing available, 200 or 68% and 210 or 71% had positive viral testing by RT-PCR from nasopharyngeal and RNA sequencing from tracheal aspirate samples, respectively. 184 or 62% were positive by both nasopharyngeal RT-PCR and tracheal aspirate RNA sequencing for a virus, and 69 or 23% were negative by both methods. Nasopharyngeal RT-PCR detected the most abundant virus identified by RNA sequencing in 92.4% of subjects. Among the most frequent viruses detected, respiratory syncytial virus demonstrated the highest degree of concordance, with a kappa equal to 0.89 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.83 to 0.94, whereas rhinovirus enterovirus demonstrated lower concordance, with a kappa equal to 0.55 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.44 to 0.66. Nasopharyngeal PCR was more likely to detect multiple viruses than tracheal aspirate RNA sequencing. Nasopharyngeal PCR-N was equal to 54 or 18.3%, while tracheal aspirate RNA sequencing N was equal to 24 or 8.1%, and the p-value was less than or equal to 0.001. Conclusions: viral nucleic acid detection in the upper versus lower respiratory tract reveals good overall agreement, but concordance depends on the virus. Further studies are indicated to determine the utility of lower respiratory tract sampling or the use of RNA sequencing to determine lower respiratory tract infection etiology. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation by Francoeur et al. Pediatric death after withdrawal of life-sustaining therapies, a scoping review. Objectives: evaluate literature on the dying process in children after withdrawal of life-sustaining therapies in the PICU. We focused on the physiology of dying, prediction of time to death, impact of time to death, and uncertainty of the dying process on families, healthcare workers, and organ donation. Data sources: Medline, Embase, Cochrane Central Register of Controlled Trials, PsycINFO, CIN-AHL, and Web of Science. Study selection: we included studies that discuss the dying process after withdrawal of life-sustaining measures in the PICU, with no date or study type restrictions. We excluded studies focused exclusively on adult or neonatal populations, children outside the PICU, or on organ donation or adult or pediatric studies where pediatric data could not be isolated. Data extraction: inductive qualitative content analysis was performed. Data synthesis: 6,225 studies were screened and 24 included. Results were grouped into 4 categories: dying process, perspectives of healthcare professionals and family, withdrawal of life-sustaining measures and organ donation, and recommendations for future research. Few tools exist to predict time to death after withdrawal of life-sustaining measures in children. Most deaths after withdrawal of life-sustaining measures occur within 1 hour, and during this process, healthcare providers must offer support to families regarding logistics, medications, and expectations. Providers describe the unpredictability of the dying process as emotionally challenging and stressful for family members and staff. However, no reports of families discussing the impact of time to death prediction were found. The unpredictability of death after withdrawal of life-sustaining measures makes families less likely to pursue donation. Future research priorities include developing death prediction tools, provider and parental decision-making, and interventions to improve end-of-life care. Conclusions. The dying process in children is poorly understood and understudied. This knowledge gap leaves families in a vulnerable position and the clinical team without the necessary tools to support patients, families, or themselves. Improving time to death prediction after withdrawal of life-sustaining measures may improve care provision and enable identification of potential organ donors. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation by Sick Samuels et al. A survey of PICU clinician practices and perceptions regarding respiratory cultures in the evaluation of ventilator-associated infections in the Bright Star Collaborative. Objectives: to characterize respiratory culture practices for mechanically ventilated patients and to identify drivers of culture use and potential barriers to changing practices across PICUs. Design: cross-sectional survey conducted May 2021 to January 2022. Setting: 16 academic pediatric hospitals across the United States participating in the Bright Star Collaborative. Subjects: pediatric critical care medicine physicians, advanced practice providers, respiratory therapists, and nurses. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We summarized the proportion of positive responses for each question within a hospital and calculated the median proportion and interquartile range across hospitals. We correlated responses with culture rates and compared responses by role. 16 invited institutions participated. 568 of 1,301, or 44%, emailed individuals completed the survey with a median hospital response rate of 60%. Saline lavage was common, but no PICUs had a standardized approach. There was the highest variability in perceived likelihood to obtain cultures for the following: isolated fever with a median of 49% and an interquartile range of 38-61%, isolated laboratory changes with a median of 49% and an interquartile range of 38-57%, fever and laboratory changes without respiratory symptoms with a median of 68% and an interquartile range of 54-79%, isolated change in secretion characteristics with a median of 67% and an interquartile range of 54-78%, and isolated increased secretions with a median of 55% and an interquartile range of 40-65%. Respiratory cultures were likely to be obtained as a pan culture with a median of 75% and an interquartile range of 70-86%. There was a significant correlation between higher culture rates and likelihood to obtain cultures for isolated fever, persistent fever, isolated hypotension, fever and laboratory changes without respiratory symptoms, and pan cultures. Respondents across hospitals would find clinical decision support helpful in 79% and thought that clinical decision support would help align ICU and/or consulting teams in 82%. Anticipated barriers to change included reluctance to change in 70%, opinion of consultants in 64%, and concern for missing a diagnosis of ventilator-associated infections in 62%. Conclusions: respiratory culture collection and ordering practices were inconsistent, revealing opportunities for diagnostic stewardship. Clinical decision support would be generally well received. However, anticipated conceptual and psychologic barriers to change must be considered. Abstract 11 is an online laboratory investigation by Williams et al. Comparison of 16 pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome-associated plasma biomarkers with changing lung injury severity. Objectives: pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or pediatric ARDS, is a source of substantial morbidity and mortality in the PICU, and different plasma biomarkers have identified different pediatric ARDS and ARDS subgroups. We have a poor understanding of how these biomarkers change over time and with changing lung injuries. We sought to determine how biomarker levels change over pediatric ARDS course, whether they are correlated, and whether they are different in critically ill non-pediatric ARDS patients. Design: two-center prospective observational study. Setting: two quaternary care academic children's hospitals. Patients: subjects under 18 years of age admitted to the PICU who were intubated and met the second Pediatric Acute Lung Injury Consensus Conference II pediatric ARDS diagnostic criteria, and non-intubated critically ill subjects without apparent lung disease. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Plasma samples were obtained on study days 1, 3, 7, and 14. The levels of 16 biomarkers were measured using a fluorometric bead-based assay. Compared with non-pediatric ARDS subjects, on day one, pediatric ARDS subjects had increased concentrations of tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin 8, interferon gamma, interleukin 17, granzyme B, soluble intracellular adhesion molecule 1, surfactant protein D, and interleukin 18, but reduced matrix metalloproteinase 9 concentrations. All p-values were less than 0.05. Day 1 biomarker concentrations and pediatric ARDS severity were not correlated. Over pediatric ARDS course, changes in 11 of the 16 biomarkers positively correlated with changing lung injury, with soluble intracellular adhesion molecule 1 having the strongest correlation, with an R equal to 0.69 and a P equal to 2.2 times 10 to the negative 16th. By Spearman-Rank correlation of biomarker concentrations in pediatric ARDS subjects, we identified two patterns. One had elevations of plasminogen activator inhibitor 1, matrix metalloproteinase 9, and myeloperoxidase, and the other had higher inflammatory cytokines. Conclusions. Soluble intracellular adhesion molecule 1 had the strongest positive correlation with worsening lung injury across all study time points, suggesting that it is perhaps the most biologically relevant of the 16 analytes. There was no correlation between biomarker concentration on day 1 and day 1 pediatric ARDS severity. However, changes in most biomarkers over time positively correlated with changing lung injury. Finally, in day 1 samples, 7 of the 16 biomarkers were not significantly different between pediatric ARDS and critically ill non-pediatric ARDS subjects. These data highlight the difficulty of using plasma biomarkers to identify organ-specific pathology in critically ill patients. Abstract 12 is an online brief report by Chilcote et al. Veno-venous extracorporeal membrane oxygenation initiation for pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome with cardiovascular instability is associated with an immediate and sustained decrease in vasoactive inotropic scores. Objective: to determine the association of veno-venous extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or VV-ECMO initiation, with changes in vasoactive inotropic scores, or VIS, in children with pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or pediatric ARDS, and cardiovascular instability. Design: retrospective cohort study. Setting: single academic pediatric ECMO center. Patients: children 1 month to 18 years treated with VV ECMO from 2009 to 2019 for pediatric ARDS with need for vasopressor or inotropic support at ECMO initiation. Measurements and main results: arterial blood gas values, VIS, mean airway pressure, and oxygen saturation values were recorded hourly relative to the start of ECMO flow for 24 hours pre-VV ECMO and post-VV ECMO cannulation. A sharp kink discontinuity regression analysis clustered by patient tested the difference in vasoactive inotropic scores and regression line slopes immediately surrounding cannulation. 32 patients met inclusion criteria. Median age was 6.6 years with an interquartile range of 1.5 to 11.7 years. 22% were immunocompromised, and 75% had pneumonia or sepsis as the cause of pediatric ARDS. Pre-ECMO characteristics included median oxygenation index of 45 with an interquartile range of 35 to 58, mean airway pressure of 32 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 30 to 34, 97% on inhaled nitric oxide, and 81% on an advanced mode of ventilation. Median vasoactive inotropic score immediately before VV ECMO cannulation was 13, with an interquartile range of 8 to 25, with an overall increasing vasoactive inotropic score trajectory over the hours before cannulation. Vasoactive inotropic scores decreased, and the slope of the regression line reversed immediately surrounding the time of cannulation, with a robust P of less than 0.0001. There were pre-ECMO to post-ECMO cannulation decreases in mean airway pressure, 32 versus 20 centimeters of water, and a p-value less than 0.001, and arterial PCO2, 64.1 versus 50.1 millimeters of mercury with a p-value equal to 0.007, and increases in arterial pH, 7.26 versus 7.38 with a p-value equal to 0.001, arterial base excess, 2.5 versus 5.2 with a p-value equal to 0.013, and oxygen saturation, 91% versus 95%, with a p-value equal to 0.013. Conclusions. Initiation of VV ECMO was associated with an immediate and sustained reduction in vasoactive inotropic scores in pediatric ARDS patients with cardiovascular instability. This vasoactive inotropic score reduction was associated with decreased mean airway pressure and reduced respiratory and/or metabolic acidosis, as well as improved oxygenation. Abstract 13 is an online brief report by Chopra et al. Pulmonary Hemorrhage in Pediatric Hematopoietic Stem Cell Transplant Recipients, a Single-Center Retrospective Study. Objectives. Pulmonary hemorrhage is a serious complication post-hematopoietic stem cell transplant, or HSCT. In view of limited available pediatric data, we performed a retrospective study to describe epidemiology, management, and outcomes of pulmonary hemorrhage post-HSCT in children in our national center. Design, retrospective study, setting, academic children's hospital from 2000 to 2015. Subjects included children less than 18 years old with pulmonary hemorrhage and requiring PICU care post-HSCT. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The historical prevalence of pulmonary hemorrhage in our center was 2.7%, or 31 of 1,148. 20 patients had a concomitant infection, 15 had bacterial infection, 8 had viral infection, and 3 patients had a fungal infection. With a median follow-up time of 60 months, 7 of 31 patients were alive. Early pulmonary hemorrhage, or less than 40 days post-HSCT, was associated with improved survival in 6 of 15 versus 1 of 16, with a p-value equal to 0.035. Patients who received high-dose pulse corticosteroids had improved survival when compared with those who did not, 7 of 22 versus 0 of 9, and a p-value equal to 0.0012. This also applied to the subgroup of patients with a concomitant infection, 5 of 15 versus 0, and a p-value equal to 0.001. None of the patients who survived had measurable respiratory sequelae. Conclusions. Pulmonary hemorrhage is a rare but serious complication after HSCT. Corticosteroids were associated with improved survival even in patients with a concomitant infection. Abstract 14 is an online brief report by Rogerson et al. Critical Care Utilization in Children with Cancer, U.S. Pediatric Health Information System Database Cohort 2012 to 2021. Objectives. To determine changes in pediatric oncology hospitalizations requiring intensive care over the period 2012 to 2021. Design. Retrospective study of hospital admission. Setting. Registry data from 36 children's hospitals in the U.S. Pediatric Health Information Systems database. Patients. Children 18 years or younger admitted to any of 36 hospitals with an oncology diagnosis. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. There were a total of 55,827 unique patients accounting for 281,221 pediatric oncology hospitalizations over the 10-year period, and 16.6% of hospitalizations included admission to the PICU. Hospitalizations and PICU admissions steadily increased over this decade. Between 2012 and 2016, 15.1% of oncology hospitalizations were admitted to the PICU, compared with 18% from 2017 to 2021, with a difference of 2.9%, a 95% confidence interval of 2.6 to 3.2%, and a p-value less than or equal to 0.0001. Support with invasive mechanical ventilation also increased over time, with 3.7% during 2012 to 2016, compared with 4.1% from 2017 to 2021, with a difference of 0.4%, a 95% confidence interval of 0.2 to 0.5%, and a p-value less than or equal to 0.0001. Similar results were seen with the following. Cardiorespiratory life support using extracorporeal membrane oxygenation with a difference of 0.05%, a 95% confidence interval of 0.02 to 0.07%, and a p-value equal to 0.0002. Multiple vasoactive agent use with a difference of 0.3%, a 95% confidence interval of 0.2 to 0.4%, and a p-value less than 0.0001. Central line placement with a difference of 5.3%, a 95% confidence interval of 5.1 to 5.6%, and a p-value less than 0.001, and arterial line placement with a difference of 0.4%, a 95% confidence interval of 0.3 to 0.4%, and a p-value less than 0.001. Year-on-year, case fatality rate was unchanged over time at 1.3%, but admission to the PICU during the second 5 years compared with the first 5 years was associated with lower odds of mortality, with a difference of 0.7% and a 95% confidence interval of 0.3 to 1.1%, and an odds ratio of 0.82, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.75 to 0.9 and a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. The percentage of pediatric oncology hospitalizations resulting in PICU admission has increased over the past 10 years. Despite the increasing use of PICU admission and markers of acuity, and on comparing 2017 to 2021 with 2012 to 2016, there are lower odds of mortality. This concludes the abstracts for the January 2024 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.